Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1980 Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters, gods, heroes, mythological beings, and whatever else that we find in it, and talking about how to use them in your game. Boy, that intro was a little raggedy, huh? Well, see, here's the thing. As you can maybe tell from my voice, I'm a little bit stuffed up. And the reason for that is that it is spring. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, the cat is dozing contentedly in the sun, Mother Earth wakens from her long slumber, and I have hay fever. Now, I took some antihistamines, but I don't know, maybe I got the kind that don't work because it doesn't seem to be having much effect. What this means is that you may hear some, like, little pauses as I turn my head discreetly away from the microphone to snuffle. I'll try and edit them out, but, you know. And I'm gonna sound a little bit nasal. I apologize for that. Anyway, this is our last episode of gods and beings from Norse mythology. Next episode, we're going to do kind of like a wrap-up for Norse mythology and just kind of go over running a Norse-inspired game, which I know several of my listeners do, so I'm interested to hear how you guys apply Norse mythology in your campaigns if you want to send me an email or mention it in the comments to this episode. There are two more entries in the Norse myth section. There's one for the Valkyries, and then there's one for the god Vidar. And then after that, I'm going to talk about two deities who kind of got left out of this section. We're going to talk about Vali, and we're going to talk about Skathi, and that ought to do it. So let's get started. Our first entry for this episode is Valkyries. Now, Valkyries are a complex topic. Here they're represented as, you know, basically kind of angels, right? They're Odin's warriors, and specifically what they do is they go down and collect brave warriors who die so that they can join Odin's army of the Einherjar. And that is probably the, like, consensus position on Valkyries. Like, let's say that interpretations of the Valkyries are a spectrum. That's the central point on that spectrum. That's the element that overlaps with most of the different representations of Valkyries in Old Norse poetry and Old Norse writing and Old Norse art and whatever. The thing is that Valkyries are very, very popular in Old Norse mythology, and they turn up in a lot of places, and they don't always turn up in a way that is consistent with exactly this description. Old Norse mythology contains a category of sort of like female supernatural beings that are linked to fate or destiny. We've already talked about the Norns, and about the distinction between the idea that they're just these three Norns, Urth, Skuld, and Vrithandi, and the idea that Norn is like a broader category type of spirit. There's also a very loosely defined category of spirits called the Dizir, and we've seen also the question of these like sea maidens, not quite sure what they are, but the daughters of Ran and Eir. I only mention them because there are going to be some examples of Valkyrie stories in which there are specifically nine Valkyries rather than a large undefined category of Valkyries. Valkyries are one of these categories, but they could very well overlap with the others. Valkyries are also probably the aspect of Norse mythology that has made it into popular culture the most. Maybe I should say that had made it into popular culture the most prior to the Thor movies. And that, of course, mainly through Wagner's operas. And the version of Norse mythology presented in Wagner, as I've had cause to say before, is not exactly the one that we find in any of the texts, right? It's a new creative work that draws on Norse myth and legend and later German retellings of those Norse myths and legends. And, I mean, if you want to say it's part of a broader, like, pan-Germanic cultural heritage, that's certainly the kind of thing that Wagner might have thought, and certainly the kind of thing that gets his name associated with the Nazis, although that's part of a broader and more complex story in the intellectual history of Europe. Boy, oh boy. Anyway, the point is that in Wagner, and therefore in many post-Wagner works, Valkyries are represented as daughters of Odin. I don't think that's really true. For one thing, one of them is named Skuld, who is one of the Norns, and in fact specifically identified in at least one source as the Norn Skuld, the youngest of the Norns. Which makes sense, since determining who lives and who dies and predicting the future are clearly interlinked responsibilities. The other is that there are several poems in which it's clear that Valkyries are human women, and not just human women who have, like, died and gone off to serve Odin, but human women who are living a normal human life, but who are just also Valkyries. So, for example, I'm going to choose two poems from the Poetic Edda, and I think these are probably the most obvious examples. Well, I mean, leaving aside Brunhild, these are the most obvious examples of a Valkyrie who is a mortal woman, and even then, about Brunhild, that's kind of debatable, right? So, this one is from Helga Kvida Hjorvardssonar. So that's the song of Helgi, the son of Hjorvard. So we join the action in progress. Helgi is sitting on a burial mound. This seems to be a pretty common place to have visions of the supernatural. And he sees nine women riding by. He looks at these nine women and he sees that one of them is the most beautiful. And she says, "Not swiftly will you, Helgi, be lord of rings, mighty apple tree of strife, or of beam plains. The eagle shrieked early, if you always stay silent, even though, lord, you proved your harsh heart." Helgi doesn't talk. He's silent. So she's calling him Helgi. He's never been called Helgi before. That has become his name. He says no name stuck to him. And so he replies, "What will you give with the name Helgi, bright-faced woman, since you've something to offer? Think well before you make your response. I won't accept it, unless I have you, too." So she says to him, "I know where swords lie on Sigar's isle, four fewer than 50. One of them is better than all the rest, the harm of battle needles, decked with gold. A ring in its hilt, great heart in its midst, awe in its point for the one that acquires it. Along its edge lies a blood-stained serpent, and on its sword boss a snake bites its tail." And she turns out to be Svava, who is the daughter of a king called Elimi. And she becomes Helgi's kind of like guardian angel. She protects him in battle. But she's also just this princess, and Helgi winds up marrying her. But again, there's an aspect of the supernatural, because after they die, they're born again. Now, I don't know about this born again thing. I think this is to do with the fact that there may have been multiple traditions about a hero named Helgi who falls in love with a Valkyrie. So there's a later... there's this later story about Helgi Hundingsbane, who has some similar experiences. And so then they're saying, like, oh, yeah, well, that was Helgi and Svava being born again, right? It's kind of repeating their love throughout history. Yeah, I mean, here's what it says in the first song of Helgi Hundingsbane. It says, "There was a king called Hugni who had a daughter called Sigrun. She became a Valkyrie and rode across sea and sky. She was Svava reborn." And so once again, I mean, she's a Valkyrie, yeah, but she's also a princess. Like, she's not some celestial being who lives in Asgard. She's a human woman who Helgi can, you know, fall in love with. So Valkyries almost seem to have this superhero thing where they have a mortal identity. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem to be a secret identity, since everybody knows who they are. I mean, they're princesses. They're public figures. And the same thing is true of the Valkyries who appear in Völundarkvida. Now, Volund, perhaps better known by his English name, Wayland the Smith, is a cunning blacksmith, and he has two brothers, and together they find some Valkyries who have come to a place called Wolf Lake and who are bathing, and in order to bathe, they've taken off their swan cloaks. This is the prose summary that comes before the poem. Oh, this is part of it. "There is a lake which is called Wolf Lake. Early one morning, they found three women on the lake shore spinning flax." I don't know where I got that idea they were bathing. I guess because they took their cloaks off. "Near them were their swan cloaks. They were Valkyries. Two of them were the daughters of King Hlodver, Hladgud, whose name means swan white, and Hervor, whose name means strange creature." And you remember that we've already encountered a warrior woman named Hervor, who was the protagonist of the poem The Waking of Angantyr. "The third was Ulrun, the daughter of Kjar of Valand. They took the woman back to the hut with them." I'll read you the bit that it says about what happened then. So this is now the poem. "Maids flew from the south right through Mirkwood, strange young creatures fulfilling fate. Beside the lake shore they settled to rest, southern ladies spinning dear linen. One of them chose Egil to fold in her arms, fair maid of men, within her bright bosom. The second was swan white, wearing swan feathers, and the third of those sisters wrapped around Volund's white neck." So again, we've seen this specific image before, right? The idea that the sort of the standard trope for not marrying someone necessarily, but, you know, falling in love with them or whatever, is to put your arms around their neck. There's a lot of description of women's arms in Old Norse poetry. "Then they stayed for 7 years after, but the whole of the eighth they yearned to go. And in the ninth, need made them depart. The maids then longed to go through Mirkwood, strange young creatures fulfilling fate. There came from the chase the weather-eyed archer, striking Finn and Egil, striking Finn is the next, the second brother, found the halls empty. They walked in and out and looked all around. Egil slid off east after Ulrun, south went striking Finn after Swanwhite. But all alone Volund sat in Wolfdale's, hammering red gold on his anvil. He closed up all the serpent rings well, so he waited for his radiant wife, in case she ever came back. So, again, here we have this idea that the Valkyries are supernatural creatures, but they're also, again, princesses, right? Of the three of them, two of them are princesses. And they're kind of human women, but also endowed with supernatural attributes. And boy, there's more that I could say. Those names of the Valkyries are about their beauty or whatever, but a lot of them have names that are things like battle or spear shaker or noise. And yeah, a lot of them specifically have names, you know, like victory and whatever. That's pretty common. Before we move on, the swan cloaks. I mean, that's interesting, right? When we think of Valkyries, we think of them riding on winged horses. And it's certainly often they're described as riding through the sky. So that makes sense, but here they seem to have bird cloaks, kind of like Freya's, and there's a lot to connect Freya to Valkyries. And that's just one more feature. Freya, too, has a bird cloak that either allows her just to fly or to turn into a bird. And we know that because Loki borrowed it to go flying around back in Thrymskvitha. Now, I have suggested this in the past, I think, that one way to incorporate Valkyries into your game is to make them not supernatural creatures at all, but just say that Valkyries are paladins of Odin. That this is what it means to be a paladin of Odin, is that you're a Valkyrie. And if you like, you could say that, you know, all paladins of Odin are female. Well, actually, I was going to say that that's a very weird thing for a god who is so kind of resolutely masculine in his coding, but actually, you know, Odin is someone who transgresses a lot of the gender norms of Old Norse societies. We mentioned way back in the first episode of this section of the podcast, Valkyries as paladins of Odin makes a lot of sense, right? If you assume that transgressing the social norm against men using magic is something that Odin does all the time, transgressing the social norm against women fighting would be another sacred act because of its transgression. Mind you, that's a flexible rule in some ways. So shield maidens are something that occurs in Norse mythology. They're exceptional, and in a way they're transgressing a social norm, but they're almost considered exceptional because they're transgressing it. So it's not a rigidly enforced rule. It's just it's the gap that produces voltage. Anyway, my point is, the ultimate paladin story is the one about what happens when your sense of morality conflicts with your god's orders, right? I mean, that's what paladins do, is they have senses of morality that conflict with the divine orders, and then they're torn by their sense of honor and obligation. But that's, of course, the famous Valkyrie story, because as we've seen, Odin does this thing where he wants the stronger fighter to lose sometimes because he needs the best men for the Einherjar. So Odin will send the Valkyries, who, remember, are, you know, these committed warrior women who admire nothing so much as great warriors, and he sends them down to collect, from their perspective, the wrong guy. And there are a couple of instances of this happening where the Valkyrie goes sideways and doesn't do what she's supposed to. So this is a part of a poem called Sigurdrifumal. Now, this story is going to sound very familiar to you because, of course, this is basically what we'll eventually know as the story of Brunhild. But here, it's the same story, but with a Valkyrie called Sigurdrif. Now, Sigurd finds this woman who is in an enchanted sleep. He first took off the helmet and saw that it was a woman. The corselet was close-fitting, as if it had grown round the flesh. He cut the corselet from the neck down with Gram and along both arms. Then he took the corselet off her, and she woke up, sat up, saw Sigurd, and said, "What cut my corselet? Why was I woken? Whose freed me from pale constraints?" He answered, "Sigmund's son and Sigurd's sword that recently sliced flesh for the raven. Long I've slept, long I've slumbered, long are the misfortunes of men. Odin is the cause why I could not break the sleeping charms." Now this is interesting. She then gives him a hornful of mead as a memory drink, whatever that means. So maybe the idea is that ordinarily a mortal might not be able to remember the words she's going to tell him? Not clear. And then she says, "Hail day, hail day's sons, hail night and her kin. Look on us here with kindly eyes and grant victory to those sitting here. Hail gods, greetings goddesses, greetings this bounteous earth. Grant speech and sense to us famous pair, and healing hands while we live." And it says, she called herself Sigurdrifa and was a Valkyrie. She said that two kings had been fighting. One of them was called Helmgunnar, who was old and the greatest of warriors. And it was to him that Odin had pledged the victory. But the other was called Agnar, Odin's brother, whom no one wanted to help. Sigurdrifa felled Helmgunnar in the battle, but Odin stuck her with a sleep thorn in revenge for this, saying that she should never again gain victory in battle, and saying that she must be married. But I told him that I'd taken a vow against marrying any man who knew fear. He, as Sigurd, spoke up and asked her to teach him wisdom, since she had news from every world. And then she teaches him a bunch of magic runes. So here we have the Valkyrie, like Odin, as the giver of magic spells. And there, it's not even that she's upset that the greatest of warriors is going to win the battle, because that seems appropriate, right? But she feels bad for the underdog. And I just, that's a very compelling character conflict, right? And a great motivator for a player character. This is someone who just wants to, you know, who wants to stick up for the little guy. Yeah, so Valkyries as Paladins of Odin. Boy, there's so much more Valkyrie stuff. I honestly have only scratched the surface, but I'm going to move on because time is short. But so that's my proposal, is that a Valkyrie is a Paladin of Odin. And if you want to, you know, tinker with the Paladin abilities, whatever, to give them some particularly Odin things, I think that wouldn't be too hard. But honestly, in 5th, which is the edition I play, I could play it pretty much straight. I mean, the magical flying would have to come from some kind of steed, and I wouldn't give it to a first level character, but still. All right, well, that was super interesting, and unfortunately, the next guy on the list is Vidar. Vidar's okay. Vidar is the son of Odin. I think I said previously that he was the son of Odin and Frigg, but that is not true. He's the son of Odin and a giantess, whose name is Grid. There's certainly a throwaway line in Skaldskaparmal that says that, and I think there's probably some other ones. And Vidar is strong and brave. He's quiet. Sometimes he's described as silent, but there's also in, I want to say, Grimnismal, it says he proclaims that he's going to seek vengeance. So I guess he can talk. Now, here's an interesting thought. He says he wants to seek vengeance for his father, because that's what Vidar's role is at Ragnarok, is that he's going to kill the wolf after it kills Odin. So Vidar and his brother Vali, who we're going to talk about next, are both avengers. They're both there to punish the killer of someone else, even if in Vali this is quite a complex problem. So Vidar is silent, but he proclaims vengeance for his father. Perhaps that's the only thing he says? That he is silent until Fenrir kills Odin, and then he proclaims vengeance and goes after the wolf? The silly thing about Vidar is that he is going to kill Fenrir with his magic boot. He has one big shoe, and specifically one big shoe. He doesn't have big shoes, he has one big shoe. And he's going to run up on the wolf, he's going to stomp on its lower jaw with his big shoe, then he's going to put his hands on its upper jaw and wrench it in half, which is a horrible image. It may be represented on a stone monument in England called the Gosforth Cross, or that may be something else. No one's really 100% sure. Otherwise, he doesn't seem to be much attested in Old Norse religion as opposed to mythology, if you see what I mean. His name comes from the same root word as wide, and may mean wide ranger, like someone who travels far, or wide ruler, someone who rules a large area. His magic shoe is one of those kind of, is like the thing about burning your fingernail cuttings. Have we talked about this? You're supposed to destroy your fingernail cuttings, because everyone who doesn't, their fingernail cuttings go to hell, and they're used to make Nilfgaard. A giant boat made of the fingernail trimmings. I guess the idea is that it's because your things you cut off your body are dead, so they're not living, but you're a living person, so they kind of have like this ambiguous ghostly quality. Anyway, the ship of the dead, Nilfgaard, is made of nail trimmings, so you burn yours so that the ship doesn't get any bigger than it already is. Now, in the same way, when you make your shoes, you cut out a piece of leather for the sole. And you first you kind of do a rough cut, and then you put your foot on it and you cut it to the right size. You know, you have the upper, and then you're gonna sew it to the sole, and you trim around the outline, and you'll have a little piece of leather left at the toe and a little piece of leather left at the heel, right? Because you're cutting it down to size, and it is all those pieces of leather that go toward making Vidar's mighty one big shoe. And you will see that this is described in the Deities and Demigods book as an iron shoe, and that is presumably because one big leather shoe is pretty stupid. Vidar is one of those guys who's going to live past Ragnarok, and like Vidar and his brother Vali, the other pair who are mentioned are another alliterating pair of brothers, Thor's sons, Magni and Mothi. So that's Vidar. He's alright. I like the focus on vengeance. That might give him a bit of something to distinguish him from the other numerous warrior gods that we've already talked about, right? I mean, just aside from Thor and Heimdall and, you know, Tyr and Ul, you know, if we're going to have another patron deity for brave warriors, he needs to be different in some way, right? Okay, now we're going to talk about two deities who I feel were left out of this section, and we're going to gloss over Vali pretty quickly, because we basically covered everything there is to cover about Vali in the episode on Baldur. Vali is born, and again, his parents are Odin and a giantess, Rind, and he is only one day old when he goes to kill Hod, which, that's pretty weird, and it's not clear whether it's a little kid killing Hod, or whether, you know, as gods sometimes will be, Vali is born as an adult. I think it's just interesting that Vali, like Vidar, is an avenger. Like Vidar, he's going to survive Ragnarok and be one of the pantheon of deities who inhabit this new world. I think it's very interesting that, other than Baldur, not very much is known about any of these deities, particularly like Mothi and Magni are just brave guys. Vali and Vidar are just more brave guys, right? So it's Baldur and Hod and four heroic warriors, which might be a fun idea for a D&D party, but not super exciting in terms of a pantheon. Anyway, that's Vali. He's all right. One thing that's interesting is this idea of Odin going off and having a son in order to avenge Baldur is also in Saxo. It's often kind of interesting what winds up in Saxo and what doesn't, because not always what you'd expect. Well, that seems like a detail that Saxo somehow thought was very important, which is kind of curious. Okay, and finally on my list of deities who I think got left out, I've got Skathi. Now, Skathi is not technically a deity per se, she's a giant, but in a list that had the Fossargrim, which is a little man who lives in a stream and will teach you how to play the fiddle if you give him mutton, I think we can stretch the definition of deity far enough that we can include Skathi, for goodness sakes. Oh, and we had the dwarf serial killer. No excuse. Okay, so who is Skathi? Skathi is the wife of Njord, the god of the sea. And the Æsir killed her father, Thjazi, who was a giant. And she's kind of like a Disney princess. She's, you know, the only, being a giant who lives in the realm of the gods and whatever is the only thing that stops her from being a fantastic player character. Here's some stuff about Skathi. The way in which the gods killed Thjazi, by the way, is wild. Thjazi has kidnapped Idun, who is the goddess who keeps the golden apples of immortality, as I think we've already covered. Loki sneaks into Thrymheim, that's Thjazi's fortress, borrowing Freya's bird cloak again, and he flies there, he sneaks into Thrymheim, he grabs Idun and turns her into a nut, takes the nut in his claws and flies away. Thrym comes home, and without any explanation for why he can do this, turns into an eagle and chases after Loki. So Loki is pegging it home for Asgard with the eagle in hot pursuit. The gods all run outside the walls of Asgard, and they build a big fire, a big pile of wood shavings. Loki dives down toward the walls of Asgard, and Thjazi follows, and Loki zips past, and just in the split second between Loki passing and Thjazi arriving, the gods light the fire. So his feathers get singed, and he falls to the ground, and they kill him. So Skathi is pretty upset because, you know, her father was killed, despite the fact that he abducted a goddess and, you know, really had it coming, but never mind. So she is, well, this is from Skaldskaparmal, and again, this is the Jesse Byock translation. Now Skathi, daughter of the giant Thjazi, put on her helmet and coat of mail, and taking all her weapons of war, set out for Asgard to avenge her father. That's a great beginning of a story. But the Æsir offered to reconcile and proposed compensation. First, she should choose a husband for herself from among the Æsir, but she might choose only from the feet of the man, seeing nothing else. So they line up all the unmarried male gods behind a curtain, I guess, like with just their feet visible, and she has to choose who her husband is going to be based on the feet. And she says, she saw that the feet of one man were especially beautiful and said, I choose that one. Few things on Baldur will be ugly. But that was Njord from Notun. Okay. There are a lot of questions here. One, I think it's really... Okay, this isn't a question, but there are a lot of things to talk about. First point, I think it's great that she is distracted from her mission of vengeance just by being super into the idea of marrying Baldur, right? Baldur the Beautiful. Like, if I don't have my goddess abducting turns into an eagle father weirdo, at least I can have a super handsome husband. Nice. But instead she gets Njord. Second question, why are Njord's feet particularly beautiful? Is the idea that because he's the god of the sea, he doesn't walk? Does he just have Vanir beauty secrets that the rest of us don't know about? I've literally got nothing. But here's the thing, there are like two other stories about how the Æsir compensated Skadi for her father's death, and they've all kind of been munged together into one here. At least I assume that's how this story happened, that there were a bunch of stories about Skadi and the Æsir, because this sounds like a real weird afternoon, is what I'm saying. Here's the next one. Another condition of her settlement was that the Æsir must do something they thought they could not do, make her laugh. Then Loki tied one end of a cord to the beard of a goat, and tied the other end around his own testicles. The goat and Loki started pulling back and forth, each squealing loudly, until finally Loki fell into Skadi's lap, and then she laughed. With this, the Æsir concluded their part of the settlement with her. What? What? Incidentally, this is a story where Loki is really proven to be heroic, right? He rescued Ethan, he's the one sorting out the settlement. I want to say this is the plot of Nigel Frith's novel Asgard, but the writing style is so fakey old-timey that I never really got to the end of it. Sorry, Nigel. And then it is said that Odin, to compensate her further, took Thjazi's eyes and cast them up into the heavens, where he made from them two stars. Fine, sure, whatever. That's a weird story. Okay, so what is Skadi like? Well, she's pretty good. First off, her marriage to Njord is not fantastic. This is from the Gylfaginning. Njord has a wife called Skadi, the daughter of Thjazi the Giant. Skadi wanted to live in the home that her father had owned up in the mountains at Thrymheim, but Njord wanted to be near the sea. They came to an agreement that they would stay 9 nights in Thrymheim and the next 3 nights at Notun. But when Njord returned to Notun from the mountain, he said, "Hateful for me are the mountains. I was not long there, only 9 nights. The howling of wolves sounded ugly to me after the song of swans," which Njord has been hearing some very different swans from the ones I have. Then Skadi said this, "Sleep I could not on the sea beds for the screeching of the bird. That gull wakes me from the wide sea he comes home each morning." Then Skadi went up to the mountains and lived in Thrymheim. She travels much on skis, carries a bow, and shoots wild animals. She's called the Ski God, or the Ski Lady. And there you go. So she skis around, she shoots things with a bow. She's kind of like Ull, basically, only with great stories about setting out to avenge her father and winding up watching a god with his junk tied to a goat. Why she is not in this book and, like, dwarf serial killer and, I mean, honestly, Ull are, I genuinely have no idea. She is fantastic. I guess she's not a god, so your characters wouldn't worship her, but neither are half the people in this book. That's something that we'll talk about in our discussion section of Norse mythology, but that's going to be next episode. For now, we are done with all the gods and monsters in the Norse myth section of the Deities and Demigods book. At one time, I thought I'd never get through it. Now we also have to start deciding what the next section is going to be. Last time I proposed doing Norse or Greek, but I don't want to do two great big ones, one right after the other. So I'm going to try and pick a relatively short section for our next one, and I'll put up a poll on the Patreon page where you can vote for it. Anyway, that's going to be next time on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.